That red light. Red light is on. So hopefully we are recording our ladies' Sunday school class here. We shall see. All right, we are on lesson 3, which is starts on page 249 in our book of Trusting God. And I know that the class last week, you probably read those first pages, 249, 250, and then answered. But I think just with, because some of us weren't here last week, and those that are listening can hear this too, I think we'll just go ahead and start at the beginning here. Lesson 3 is God's sovereignty over people. And it covers actually chapter 4 in the book. But we're going to start on page 249 in our Trusting God book, God's Sovereignty Over People. The central idea is that God works in the hearts of people to move them to fulfill His purposes. Any treatment, good or bad, that we receive from another can be seen as part of God's plan for us. Examining trust. We are, from a human point of view, often at the mercy of other people and their decisions or actions. Sometimes those decisions or actions are benevolent and good. Sometimes they are wicked or careless. Either way, they do affect us, often in a significant way. How are we to respond when we find ourselves seemingly in the hands of someone else, when we desperately need a favorable decision or a favorable action on that person's part? Can we trust God that He can and will work in the heart of that individual to bring about His plan for us? Or consider the instance when someone is out to harm us, to ruin our reputation, or to jeopardize our career. Can we trust God to intervene in the heart of that person so that he does not carry out his evil intent? According to the Bible, the answer in both instances is yes. Perhaps the clearest biblical statement that God does sovereignly influence the decisions of people is found in Proverbs 21:1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a watercourse wherever he pleases. The stubborn will of the most powerful monarch on earth is directed by God as easily as the farmer directs the flow of water in his irrigation canals. The argument then is from the greater to the lesser. If God controls the king's heart, surely he controls everyone else's. God can and does move in the hearts of people to show favor to us when that favor will accomplish his purpose. Furthermore, when necessary, God restrains people from decisions or actions that would harm us. Of course, God does not always restrain the wicked and harmful actions of others towards His people. We do not know why God sometimes allows our enemies to prevail and sometimes restrains them. It is enough to know that God can and does restrain the harmful acts of others towards us when that is His sovereign will. You can trust God in all the areas of your life where you are dependent upon the favor or frown of another person. God will move in that person's heart to carry out His will for you. The Bible asserts both God's sovereignty and people's freedom and moral responsibility, but it never attempts to explain their relationship. For one thing, God is infinite in His ways as well as His being. A finite mind simply cannot comprehend an infinite being beyond what He has expressly revealed to us. Because of this, some things about God will forever remain a mystery to us. The relationship of the sovereign will of God to the freedom and moral responsibility of people is one of those mysteries. We must also keep in mind that God is never the author of sin. Though people's sinful intents and actions serve the sovereign purpose of God, we must never conclude that God has induced anyone to sin. God judges people for the very sins that He uses to carry out His purpose. The Bible consistently portrays people as making real choices of their own will. The choices people make are moral choices. That is, people are held accountable by God for the choices they make. God works without violating or coercing people's will. Rather, He works in His mysterious way through their wills to accomplish His purposes. There are some cautions we need to consider lest we wrongly use the doctrine of God's sovereignty over people. First, We should never use the doctrine as an excuse for our own shortcomings. Second, we should not allow the doctrine of God's sovereignty to cause us to respond passively to the actions of other people that affect us. The doctrine of God's sovereignty should never be used to promote passivity. Third, we must never use the doctrine of God's sovereignty to excuse our own sinful actions or decisions that hurt another person. There was a lot in there. So let's developing trust here. Examine the following scriptures for evidence of God's work in the hearts of believers and unbelievers. Record the key words used to describe his working. So if we just go around here, if we start, Sandy, if you would look up the both those Ezra passages, I guess there's three verses, 1:1 and 5 and 6:22, and then Carolyn, Proverbs 21:1. Galen, Daniel 1:9, Susie, 2 Corinthians 8:16 and 17, Dolores, if you would look up Deuteronomy 2:30, Mandy, would you like to read today or not?
No, not mine.
You would like to read? Okay, Joshua 11:20, please. So we're looking at the key words in these verses to describe how God works. And of course, we're looking at the sovereignty, examining God's work in the hearts of believers and unbelievers. So we're looking for key words to describe how he works.
Okay, Ezra 1:1. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he sent a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and also put it in writing. And verse 5, and the heads of the fathers' households of Judah and Benjamin and the priests and Levites arose, when everyone whose spirit God had stirred to go up and rebuild the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem. And 6:22, and they observed the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with joy, for the Lord had caused them to rejoice, and had turned the heart of the king of Assyria toward them to encourage them in the work of the house of God and the God of Israel. So he stirred up the hearts, stirred them up, caused them to rejoice, and had turned the heart of the king. One version says, move the heart, and another version says, changing the attitude of.
Yeah, so it definitely tells us how God stirred up the spirit of these unbelieving kings, changed their attitude, turned the heart of the king. So God can work in the hearts of unbelievers. Proverbs 21:1.
The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turned it whithersoever he will. The Lord turned it. Mm-hmm. He's in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just even picture that. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He can turn it however he will. I mean, isn't that quite the word picture, even just to picture that? And how in the book he talked about how a farmer can change his irrigation canals very quickly and easily. And that's what this word picture is of how God can take a king's heart.
The NIV uses the word directs.
Directs.
I had written in from some other lesson, God can overrule or override. Mm-hmm. Which, that's what our computers do. They can override almost anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Daniel 1:9.
And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. God gives us favor and compassion. He gives us how he wants us to be perceived.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here is this, the commander of the officials, and God granted favor of Daniel to this official, to this man that was in charge, because of Daniel's, how Daniel was true to God.
I like the word granted.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a gift.
Right. It was a gift, wasn't it? In 2 Corinthians 8.
I thank God who put into the heart of Titus the same concern I have for you. For Titus not only welcomed our appeal, but he is coming to you with much enthusiasm and on his own initiative. They're the same principle that the other verses, you know, God's directing Titus's heart and mm-hmm. going the way he wants him.
Yep. What was your word? Concern? He gave us, mine says earnestness. My
concern.
Puts the same concern in the heart of Titus, yeah. Put it in his heart. And then Deuteronomy 2:30.
Yeah, well, pronunciation of these two. But Sion, is that right?
Uh-huh.
King of Heshbon.
Uh-huh.
Would not let us pass by him, for the Lord thy God hardened his spirit and made his heart abstinent, and that he might deliver him into thy hand as appeareth his day.
So what did the Lord do to his heart?
He changed his heart.
Mm-hmm. He hardened his heart. The king's heart, hardened his spirit, made his heart obstinate. This was to give the Israelites victory. I mean, so this was victory over their enemies. And it was a situation where that the king wouldn't allow them to go through their land. So the Lord hardened his heart in that instance. And then Joshua 11:20.
The Lord made those people stubborn, so they would fight against Israel. And he could completely destroy them without mercy. That is what the Lord had commanded Moses to do.
Mm-hmm. So there again, the Lord hardened their hearts and so that they would utterly destroy them. So that, again, the conquest of their enemies, that they might receive no mercy, but he might destroy them. So the Lord can harden hearts, he can soften hearts, work in the hearts, grant favor to hearts. He controls the hearts of believers and unbelievers in these instances. And then in Exodus 4:21 and 8:15, so if, Sandy, if you would do Exodus 4:21 and Carolyn 8:15, who is given the responsibility for Pharaoh's hard heart in each of these verses?
And the Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders which I have put in your power, but I will harden his heart so he will not let the people go.
And then 8:15.
But when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto him, as the Lord had said.
So, of course, who's given the responsibility for Pharaoh's hard heart?
Lord.
The Lord.
God's Pharaoh himself, really, too. Because it said the Pharaoh saw that there was, he hardened his heart. So it's like, you know, I don't think he realized that he was doing it under God's direction.
Well, and that's kind of the next question. How do these verses taken side by side help us see the relationship between man's responsibility and God's work in our hearts?
Man always has a choice.
Yeah.
But God is in control.
And that's, I mean, it just seems like it's oxymoron, a paradox, however you want to say it. And it is like he's, and I really appreciate how in the book, and even in that chapter, if you haven't had a chance to read that full chapter, chapter four, and I guess we read a little bit in the beginning here, of just the mysteries. There are some mysteries that we just cannot comprehend.
It's hard for us to understand. It doesn't make sense to us, really.
Right.
fact, everything he does doesn't make sense to us. Why is he good? Why is he so good to us?
Yeah, we sure don't deserve it, do we? No.
In the chapter, it said something about God does sovereignly intervene in the heart of people in such a way that they make their decisions by their own free will.
Yes. So yes, it's not, it is a mystery. It's not like God is coercing them or forcing them. It's like they're not a puppet, that he's doing this, that, and the other thing. And he brought that up, I believe. And some people look at, you know, think that God, that we are his puppets and he knows everything we're going to do, which he does. But it's like we have the free choice, we have the free will. And it just, it is a mystery. It really is. Okay, the third question there. God's restraining influence on people's actions and decisions is seen in the following verses. Complete the chart. So he's got different scriptures here, looking to see what action did God prevent and what emotion did God influence. So talking about God influencing emotions even, I thought that was an interesting way of looking at this. So Gaylen, if you would read Genesis 20. Verses 1 through 7, and Susie, Genesis 35, 5, and Dolores, Exodus 34, 23 to 24, and then Mandy, if you want to get ready, I mean, we're going to go, that next question will be Genesis 50, 20, if you want to look up Genesis 50, 20, but we're going to look at this chart here first. And God's restraining influence on people's actions and decisions. So Genesis 20, 1 through 7.
From there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned in Gerar. And Adam said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister, and Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, you are a dead man because of the woman you have taken, for she is a man's wife. Now Abimelech had not yet approached her, so he said, Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, she is my sister? And she herself said, he is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this. Then God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now then, return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, so that he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not return her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. So God prevented Abimelech from sinning through the dream, speaking to him, and he had... The emotion was he was defensive, I guess, because he didn't do it, so he told God that and was honest with God, and I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I didn't know if it was the physical desire that Abimelech could have had for Sarah that God prevented him from touching her. So I don't know if it was that the physical desire itself that he took. I don't know what others took away from that.
He prevented Sarah's being defiled. And the emotion I thought was lust.
Yeah, I saw the physical desire. Yeah. Yeah.
The way they worked.
But then that last verse, it talked about, then it said, but if you do this, so there again, there is the free will, because he, you know, he
still had the choice.
And he made the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
He could have not.
Mm-hmm.
I got a note in here, it said that Abimelech took many unmarried women into his harem, and Sarah was now 90.
Might have had something to do with it.
Well, we don't know. We'll find out later this week if we are or not. Oh, goodness. Okay, Genesis 35, 5.
Genesis 35,
Then they set out, and the terror of God fell upon the towns and around them, so that no one pursued them.
You almost have to read a few verses ahead of that to find out the context.
I'm going to start with four. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods they had and the rings in their ears, and Jacob buried them under the oak at Shechem. Then they set out, and the terror of God fell upon the towns all around them, so that no one pursued them. Apparently, they picked up some plunder, and God put fear into the hearts of the people in the towns.
Right.
So they would not pursue them.
Exactly. So the Canaanites were prevented. God prevented the Canaanites from pursuing Jacob's family and destroying them, and he put fear into their hearts. So, yeah. And then Exodus 34, 23 and 24.
Thrice in the year shall all your male children appear before the Lord God, the God of Israel, for I will cast out all the nations before thee, and enlarge thy borders, neither shall thy any man desire thy land, when thou shalt go up to appear before the Lord thy God thrice in the year.
So there were three times during the year, the Jewish festivals, that all the Jewish men came to Jerusalem for these festivals. So their land was left unprotected, so to speak. So what action did God prevent in this?
The loss of land.
The loss of the land.
Invasion.
Invasion of the land during these times of the festivals, yep. And then what emotion did God influence? What?
With the lack of covetousness.
I said covetousness too, yeah. That they would not covet the land and go in and inhabit the land or invade the land or whatever while they were gone. So going on here, according to the following verses, how do the sinful actions of man affect God's purposes? So Mandy's going to do Genesis. Sandy, if you do Acts 4, 27, 28, and Carolyn, Revelation 17. So Genesis 50, verse 20. This is one of my favorite verses.
You meant to hurt me, but God turned your evil into good to save the lives of many people, which is being done.
Yes, this was the end of Joseph's story. So how does this tell us about the sinful actions of man affect God's purposes?
Again, what man means for evil, God means for good.
Yep.
Is to preserve his people's lives.
Yep. Man can do evil and mean it to bring harm on them, but God will use it for his purposes, can and will use it for his purposes. Isn't that astounding? I mean, really? But then, interesting how he says, but they are still held accountable for that sin. They are still going to be held accountable. Even though God is using it for his purposes, they're still going to be judged for that sin. So.
Maybe not in this life.
Correct. Exactly.
Although maybe in this life.
But maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Just proves again that God is perfectly just, isn't he? Perfectly just. So Acts 4, 27 and 28.
For truly in this city there were gathered together against thy holy servant Jesus, whom thou didst anoint both Herod and Pontius Pilate, along with the Gentiles and the peoples of Israel, to do whatever thy hand and thy purpose predestined to occur. So he was using people opposed to him as a tool to execute his will.
Mm-hmm. Didn't talk, say something about his predestined, his purposes are predestined in there. So man can do evil, but God's hand rules over all, and his purposes are predestined. He has a plan, and it cannot be thwarted. There's that word again. His plan cannot be thwarted by evil men. Cannot be prevented.
Yeah, The responsibility was laid both on the Jews and the Gentiles.
Yeah, yeah. So Revelation 17, 15 to 18.
And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest, where the horse sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall take the whore, and make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. For God has put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of the Lord shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Well, I wrote, man fulfills God's plan in spite of himself.
Very true. And I said, God has put it in their hearts to execute his purpose by having a common purpose. I mean, there was a lot in there, Revelation, that we won't go into with all that, but I think the idea for this part of the study is just that, again, God's plan is to, God can put it in the hearts of people to execute his purposes. Anyone else have any thoughts on that?
Isn't it amazing how often we're told that in the scriptures? It's over and over and over. We've been all over the Bible. We're going to have new Bibles by the time we finish this class. My pages are going to be worn out.
Yes. So do we trust him? Can we trust this God who has the hearts of everyone in his hand, believers and unbelievers in our life?
Hi, Ann.
So do you agree that a finite mind cannot comprehend an infinite being beyond what he has expressly revealed? Why or why not?
We can't know all the things of God.
No, we cannot know all the things of God.
We can only know what God chooses to reveal to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he chooses to reveal only certain things. In the book, and I don't know, it's on page 58, and I kind of had this high, and we might have read it in our intro, but he talks about the problem of God's sovereignty. God is infinite in his ways as well as his being. A finite mind simply cannot comprehend an infinite being beyond what he has expressly revealed to us. Because of this, again, some things about God will forever remain a mystery. The relationship of the sovereign will of God to the freedom and moral responsibility of people is one of those mysteries. I thought that was an important thing, but then we can't use that sovereignty. I thought it was good, too, how he brought that out, that we cannot use the sovereignty of God to excuse our sinful behavior or excuse our passivity and say, well, I'm not going to do that or this because God is sovereign and whatever happens, happens, and I'm not responsible to do anything. That we can't use it for that, you know, that excuse. We tend to be full of excuses for things, don't we? Or we must never use the doctrine of God's sovereignty to excuse our own sinful actions or decisions that hurt another person. So we have to be careful how we use the doctrine of God's sovereignty. So God can and does work in the minds and hearts of people to accomplish his will. How should that truth affect your attitude? God can and does work in the minds and hearts of people. People in our lives, people that are in our life, he works in their hearts and minds to accomplish his will. How should that truth affect your attitude? And I put, because he talked about bitterness, and I said, no bitter root should grow when things don't go according to my plan and my agenda. Do any of you have a plan or an agenda?
I do, because moving down to Florida.
Moving to Florida.
James says, You can make your plans, but say, if God wills
it. If God wills it, yes.
We should always seek his will. We can't seem to get it through our heads that he knows best.
I don't know if any of you ever read Jan Caron books. They're novels, K-A-R-O-N, Jan Caron, the Mitford series. It's about an Episcopal priest and just the town folks and all of his congregation stuff. But his four-word prayer was always, "Thy will be done." Thy will be done. That's a hard prayer to pray. Because we are selfish. Those of you who have not have been to first service. What's that? Right?
Lord, you know what I want. You know what my will is, but I do want your will. Because
mm-hmm.
I know
mm-hmm.
that's what's best.
Yeah. So. That's what's best, and that's the only thing that's going to bring us lasting joy and peace. But yes, it does take, we just have to relearn that and relearn that and relearn that, don't we? So how should this truth affect the way you pray about your job or other concerns? That God can and does work in the high minds and hearts of people. And we've kind of talked about that. Just praying, you know, for the Lord to do his will and to trust him with it. And that is, I think that's just part of the Christian life, the journey that we're on, is just relearning that over and over.
Say, Lord, you know my will, but I want your will to be done, but help me to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Your will, my will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You tend to pray that the other way around.
Yeah. And make your desires my desires. You know, in the Psalms where it talks about he will give us the desires of our hearts, mm-hmm. but make those desires your desires.
As well as the words I speak, the thoughts I think, the actions I do.
Yeah.
Feelings.
Yeah, you talk about emotion. God can control the emotions, and not just of other people, of ours as well. So why should confidence in God's sovereignty in the lives of people keep us from becoming resentful and bitter when we are treated unjustly or maliciously by others?
Same lesson. He knows best all the time.
That is a hard one, isn't it? When you are treated unjustly or maliciously, and to think that God has allowed that, and that's often going into the why. And
we say why rather than why not.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we that we shouldn't have to go through some of those things? And what am I supposed to learn from that?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And God can show us things about ourselves that we don't see.
Yep.
When we go through something really hard.
And sometimes it's, okay, that person needs to learn da-da-da-da-da. It's so easy to point the finger.
Exactly.
So then it is. It's, you know, Lord, what are you teaching me? Or
sitting in your seat.
Yeah, I'm there. That's why I'm there, because I need to hear it now.
Or I thought, you know, why are you pruning me? Or what are you pruning? What ugly branch are you pruning off of me? Through this situation or through this whatever. And why am I thinking of myself? Am I thinking of myself pridefully or selfishly or, you know, whatever? So, yes, there's a lot that God can, but God, yeah, for some reason, has allowed that to occur in our life. And again, what is he trying to teach us through it? Or how is he growing me through this?
Didn't say, why me, Lord? He said, here am I.
Yeah.
Send me.
Yeah.
It's hard, though, I think, when you're talking to other people about that, like other people that are going through.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe he's working.
Yes. That is very it is true. And that's, he talks about that in this chapter, I think. We have to be very, very careful of doing, you know, of not preaching at somebody and saying, well, he must be trying to teach us something through this. It depends on the person, depends on the individual, depends on your relationship with that person. You know, all those things go into it.
It's trying to avoid being the Holy Spirit for somebody else. Mm. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes sharing what how you've worked through a difficult situation, or this is how God worked in my life. You know, I can pray for you. But yeah, and I've often said, I can't do, you know, and people in my life that have had difficult situations, it's like, I can't do that work for you. You have to do the work, and you have to, you know, pray. I will pray with you and for you, but you have to. You know, it's their spirit that has to be touched by the Holy Spirit. You know what I mean? But, yeah, that is hard. And
plus, I think it's easier. Right when you're in the middle of it, it's so hard to see.
Of course.
You know, that once you're out of it, looking back, you'll, you know, then you maybe you'll understand.
Yes.
But when you're right in the middle. And
it's a tough spot, yep.
I guess that's just where faith.
Yes.
You know that he's going to use it at some point.
Yes.
You know, it's his will, and you know it yes. wouldn't be happening if he thought it wasn't going to turn out for the best. So.
Right, right.
But I always go to the example of a sculptor who chisels away at the stone to mold it in the image that he wants. That's what God's doing to us. He's chipping away those things in our lives that need to change to make us in his image.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it hurts.
Yes.
That chiseling is no fun.
Good.
What's that?
Some of those things look pretty good for us.
Oh.
We don't want to part with them.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Right. So then, I don't know if anybody wanted to share any time these questions from question 8. Describe a time when you were treated unfairly. How did you react? To what extent did your reaction show trust in God? How would you like your response to be different next time? And what was the end result? And what good, if any, came from this situation?
I'm putting a few things down in my own words, actually.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
For me, for 8, yeah, for them, when I got hit, when I was about in my chest at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked for the react. And the other one, I put out her feelings, mm-hmm. You know, my feelings when you get it.
Right.
I would have said, excuse me. And then for the last one, I said, I put even more nicer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's hard when.
There was a time when I got very hurt by someone very close. And I became angry. I was hurt. I was bitter. I was resentful. And it really turned to hate.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, I didn't know I could hate, but I found out I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so the action to trust in God was not there at that time, but it would be different now. And I did learn from that, that I can trust. I learned about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that I had to be forgiven. And so who am I not to give forgiveness?
Mm-hmm.
And so he took me to the woodshed, and it was miserable. And when you get in that state, it affects all your relationships, people close to you, your family.
Yep.
You take it out on them, because you don't really want to take it out on that person, because they wouldn't get it. You know, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a spiral.
Right.
Thing downward if we're not careful.
Right.
But the Lord brought the word to me and taught me that there was a purpose in all of that, that I did learn from it, and thankful for it.
Mm-hmm.
I can say thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Sandy. And thanks, Mandy, for sharing those times. So what are some specific things you can pray for in your own life this week, knowing God can work in people's hearts? And you can write those things down or think about those things of things that are coming up for you this week. And again, keeping that in mind, that God can work in people's hearts, people that are around us, people that can affect your workplace, in your home, just any relationship that we have, that God will be working in not just your heart, but other people's hearts.
It's important for us to put on the armor of God.
Mm-hmm.
Really on a daily basis.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Putting on the armor of God is, yes, very important. We are in a battle, a spiritual battle, because the enemy doesn't want to see us living joyfully and living victoriously and, you know, living with a faith that's, you know, knowing that God has our best interests at heart and his purposes for our life are good. So, and then again, describe a time recently when you were affected by someone else's decision or action. How did you feel about the situation? How do you feel now about the outcome? Does your study of God's sovereignty in the hearts of people affect your perspective on what happened and how? So I would just encourage you to, you know, look at that and look at times that other people have affected things that have gone on in your life, and just knowing that God has a purpose in it and a plan for it, and his plans are always good for us, are best for us, and...
They changed my times on my treatments to go an hour later, so I had to reset the time for them to pick me up. And at first, I didn't know if they were going to be able to do it, but they worked it out. And I thought, why do I get anxious about things?
Oh,
that's going to work it out if that's what he wants me to do. So, and he did. He worked it out.
Oh, good.
So
how many weeks do you have left?
Just finished the fifth week, and I'll have either, I think, probably three more. They extended it, so I hope that's it. So we'll see.
So like I said, if you hadn't had a chance to read that chapter in this book, I would encourage you to read that chapter 4 on God's sovereignty over people. And next week we will do God's rule over the nations, chapter 5, which is lesson 4. It's kind of confusing, but page 259, we will start on lesson 4 next week. So let's close in a word of prayer. Lord, again, we just thank you for your word and how we just learn from your word of how you work in the hearts and minds and even emotions of people and those around us, as well as our own Father, and just thank you that your plan is never thwarted. Your purposes are good and true and for our best and for your glory, Father, and just help us to live in that truth even this week, and as we continue to grow in our faith and our trust in you, Father, even in situations that are difficult within our lives, knowing that you are sovereign over all. You have allowed difficult situations to come to us, and just help us to grow in those, knowing that your plan is always the best. And we love you and thank you for your great love for each one of us. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.